U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe says Donald Trump, the president of the United States, could be a Russian asset. And the president returns the favor, calling him a liar who can't be trusted. We'll try to sort through the facts of this latest round of Donald Trump versus the former officials of Jim Comey, former Director Jim Comey's Federal Bureau of Investigation, and what it tells us, if anything, about the Robert Mueller probe going forward. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, here with my colleague from the editorial page of The Wall Street Journal, Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
All right. Let's talk about the Andrew McCabe saga. Went on 60 Minutes on Sunday to tell the world that he had had a conversation after the firing in May 2017 by Donald Trump of James Comey with then-Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who said that over whether or not to remove the President of the United States using the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, which calls for the a vote of the cabinet and others that can remove a president from his responsibilities temporarily, perhaps if he's disabled or unable for physical mental reasons to fulfill his duties. It, of course, has never been used in a position to deal with the political differences or of the kind that Rosenstein and McCabe were supposed to have discussed. Rob Rosenstein said, doesn't deny the conversation, but said he wasn't in any position to be able to move forward with the 25th Amendment. And McCabe claims that Rosenstein brought it up and he merely shook his head and didn't offer very much in response. He did mention it later to James Baker, who was the general counsel at the FBI. And according to Mr. McCabe, Mr. Baker said, well, we're not there yet. Makes you wonder what would have taken for them to get there, Kim. I have to say, I mean, most of the press is looking at this as if this is simply another more evidence that Donald Trump may in fact be a Russian asset, while others, and I have to admit I'm one of them, looks at it and says, how in the world did we get here where senior Justice Department and FBI officials were talking about essentially what would have been deposing a president 5 months after an election on political grounds?
Yeah, I'm with you. I find this nothing less than stunning, and also somewhat stunning that the press is not taking that the same way, too, because we're talking about very serious questions here, and as you said, unprecedented ones. I find the whole way McCabe has put this out to be interesting because it strikes me he went and did that interview with 60 Minutes, and then an excerpt of it came out, and this point about the 25th Amendment came up and caused the reaction that you would think it would. And I think if you read between the lines, Mr. McCabe put that out there precisely is in order to kind of raise the stakes and give further justification, as it were, for the steps that the FBI took to say, look, this is how serious this was. You know, we truly believed the president could be a Russian asset, so much so that we felt we needed to look into this 25th Amendment step. When the inevitable reaction came, you noticed that McCabe walked it back a little bit, saying, oh, well, it wasn't a bunch of extended discussions. It just came up this time, and it was really all on Rosenstein and not so much on me. I'm not quite sure he thought through just how big the blowback would be and that people would start using words like coup or a bureaucratic coup or et cetera. And so this is how we get where we are. But it is obviously shocked enough people. We now have Lindsey Graham, and I think this is a great thing, who's now heading the Senate Judiciary Committee, saying, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. This is serious stuff. And he's using it as another reason, which is great, to say that he's, you know, going to do a full out investigation into the FBI and DOJ's action during that time frame and to decide whether or not any of this was legitimate or justified.
And I'm looking forward to that hearing, even though we may not. If Rosenstein and McCabe stick to their stories, we might not learn all that much new. But it could be interesting nonetheless to have them on the record talking about the extent of those conversations and who they brought in, if anyone, to talk about it. As I read the Constitution, the 25th Amendment was passed in the wake of the JFK assassination to try to create a process by which you could have a peaceful transfer of power. And it has been used, I think, on a couple of occasions regarding when presidents were incapacitated through surgery or something like that. Power was transferred for a short period of time to the vice president of the United States. It is not intended, was not designed, and I think its framers, its writers would have been appalled to see it used and floated by the media and others and much less public officials to try to talk about removing a president for essentially political reasons. That tool under the Constitution is impeachment. That's what impeachment is for. If somebody you really suspect to be a Russian agent, you need to bring that through the impeachment process. Now, what's really also interesting, and I think, is that that time, the weeks of May in 2017 around the Comey firing, there's no question they were times of enormous public uproar, at least in Washington, and there was a lot of people panicked, Kim. A lot of people in the press corps panicked. Maybe you had people in the Justice Department panic. What is this all about? Why did Donald Trump fire Jim Comey? And yet, that's not an excuse for people losing their bearings, particularly journalists who ought to be out there trying to say, well, let's follow constitutional means.
Right. And we expect these people that are in the highest positions to be the ones that do keep their heads. And you would expect, moreover, guys like Rob Rosenstein, deputy attorney general at the time, who is a lawyer, knows the Constitution well, to understand that this is not a place you go, the 25th Amendment, that there are obviously far more adequate and legitimate means of moving ahead if you are a member of law enforcement. And that is, as you say, you go and you tell Congress and you leave it with them if they want to pursue the avenue of impeachment, or you continue your investigation until you actually have some evidence. Because, look, I think that's a very important aspect of this, too. We are 2 years on from this moment, and at least publicly, there is no concrete evidence in any way that Donald Trump was an asset of the Russian government. We'll see what Mr. Mueller comes up with when he puts his report out. But it seems hard to me, at least, to believe that if there was some such concrete evidence, it wouldn't be out. But you have to go back 2 years ago. We had even less. And so they were having this discussion in full knowledge. And in fact, you know, Andrew McCabe has said as much. They didn't have any proof at that time that this was all guesswork. So you continue your investigation to see if you find something and you follow it up from a law enforcement perspective. But you don't go down the road of the 25th. I would point out, too, by the way, that they Andrew McCabe has said, well, we did go and we briefed the Gang of Eight about the fact that we had opened this official investigation into the president himself. And I didn't get in. We didn't get any pushback at the time. And that, to me, is an astonishing statement. And it kind of gets to how slippery Mr. McCabe is, because whatever their reaction might have been at that very moment when he said that, obviously, Congress was very concerned, because that was a point at which, for instance, House Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes started looking himself into what the FBI and DOJ were doing.
Well, and that briefing of the Gang of Eight was in 2017. This was after Donald Trump was president. I want to continue with this about what Robert Mueller knows or doesn't. When we come back, you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with The Wall Street Journal with Kim Strassel. And we're talking about the Andrew McCabe and FBI versus Donald Trump saga, which is continuing now with Andrew McCabe hawking a memoir of his time in the FBI and specifically his interactions with Donald Trump and others about Donald Trump. Kim, let's step back from this and try to consider what we know now so far about where Robert Mueller, what he's done so far. It will be 2 years in May for the investigation, so roughly about 21 months. He has had unlimited subpoena power. He has had the benefit of the counterintelligence operations of the federal government and has used those to indict a number of Russian hackers and others. So where do we stand? I mean, I guess your view would be, because there's two views, narratives that seem to have developed here, if I can oversimplify. One is that Robert Mueller is going full bore. He's got many different leads still to go. And he knows a lot more than we know, and he's going to come out with evidence that shows that if Donald Trump is not an active agent of the Russians or wasn't a conspirator, then he is at a minimum a useful idiot, essentially. That's one narrative. And the evidence will show that, clear and compelling evidence, perhaps impeachable. All right, that's one narrative. The other one is, well, where's the evidence? We're 21 months in. All right, we haven't found it, we haven't seen it. I mean, we've seen some indictments of people associated with the campaign for lying for offenses that aren't related to Russia, related to other business. And Paul Manafort, for example, the former campaign chairman. What we haven't seen is any evidence directly of any conspiracy between Russia and the Trump campaign, or even collusion. There are sort of facts of meetings and things, none of which stitch together into a portrait of collusion. So that narrative suggests Mueller is winding down, and there may be less here than meets the eye. Is that a fair summary in your view of where we are?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would note that those who continue that Mueller as pursuing many different leads and there's still lots to go and that there's all kinds of ways in which collusion could have happened. You know, a lot of them are in the press and some obviously have an interest in more headlines and reader clicks by continuing to talk about that. I think one weakness with that theory is that if you look, for instance, at the indictment Mueller has issued, including on some of the main people that the press are convinced are the avenues for this conspiracy, Paul Manafort, Michael Cohen, the indictments themselves make no reference to any other further evidence. And it's somewhat hard to see how those indictments could be done in such a way that you could just bury any other evidence like that. So it's hard to believe that those figures are somehow central to some grand conspiracy that Robert Mueller is waiting to lay out on us. I tend to gravitate more toward the second one only because, and it's been notable, Paul, just in the past couple of weeks, some of the folks that were in the middle of all of this back when it was happening have themselves started lowering expectations for what we might expect from Mueller. I saw James Clapper, the former former head of the DNI, out just this weekend saying, well, you know, it could be that he isn't going to answer any of those questions. And this is going to be a little of a, you know, it's really going to be kind of a big nothing. And that is why, by the way, you need to turn your attention to what House Democrats are now doing in their next stage of their investigation, because you're not going to get anything from Bob Mueller. That to me suggests that they are worried that they're not going to get a grand collusion conspiracy, but they still want to keep the investigations rolling. So we're going to seamlessly transition to House.
And some journalists who've been the most breathless about some of this investigation are also making the point that Clapper did, that maybe the final report or the final outcome of this will be less than they would have hoped. Regarding the House Democrats, Andrew Schiff, the head of the Intelligence Committee, now the Democrats run the House, is doing exactly what Clapper suggested. He is now, in essence, reopening the Russia probe, particularly with a focus on Donald Trump's business with Russia. And he has even said that he does not think that Mueller will be thorough enough in going after any Donald Trump ties to Deutsche Bank, which was a financier over time, I think, of some of the Trump operations. And he's going to do that. Now, if as a political matter, if Mueller does not find evidence of a collusion, I think that that would be a significant event. And I'm not so sure that whatever the House Democrats do would be able to come close in terms of damaging the Trump presidency. So Mueller is really still the main game here.
I absolutely agree. I mean, you do see them working hard. Adam Schiff has been out there saying, as you said, this what he's attempting to do is say this is going to be a new phase, as it were, of the Trump-Russia investigation. It actually sounds to me like it's a entirely separate investigation that gets into Trump's finances. And we've always known that Democrats were going to go down that road anyway. But their goal is to make it sound as though it is still all connected with Russia, keep the Russia fog out there. But I agree with you. If Mueller comes out and says, look, I've been doing this now for 2 years and pursued all this, and there is no concrete evidence, it's going to be a harder pull for Democrats to make something like that stick.
What happens, Kim, if there is a if, as John Dowd, Trump's former lawyer who left the as his attorney last year, recently said, I don't even think there may be a report. So they may just close, just say, all right, this is these are the extent of our indictments. We're going to pursue these cases to the end. But that's all there is. What happens then politically?
Well, that actually, I mean, it's hard to know, Paul, because on the one hand, the great fear in the White House, and I think among some Republicans, that was Mueller was going to put out a report that was somewhere in between, right? It didn't have any concrete evidence of collusion. But instead, it would be a long, rambling thing with a lot of innuendo and allow people to draw, you know, their own inferences about whether or not something untoward had happened.
A lot of dots, a lot of meetings, a lot of episodes, but no connecting tissue, no connecting framework.
Right. And, you know, I think from the White House's perspective, that's a terrible place to be. Maybe even worse than, well, not worse than a claim of collusion, but just in that it doesn't settle anything and it allows all the those who have conspiracy theories about this to blow them even bigger. It doesn't settle anything. But not putting out a report at all, there's a question, does it do the same thing, right? I mean, does it – I mean, maybe it's not as bad, but it's just a – I think it would probably be a better situation for the White House if there's no report. It'll leave a lot of folks on the other side disappointed. And it'll be interesting to see what Mueller does. He doesn't necessarily have to follow any particular route here. Some special counsels in past have obviously written very long reports, like Ken Starr into the Clinton scenario. Others have taken the view that if there's nothing there to the actual crime or situation they were asked to investigate, then it wasn't their job to comment any further, and they closed up shop and went home.
Well, some of those earlier independent councils were when the late and unlamented independent council statute was in force, and you were obliged to issue some kind of a report. Now, this is a special counsel without that statute under internal Justice Department rules, and there's no obligation for a special counsel to issue a report, and several who have been named have not, including the one, remember, that Eric Holder named to look into the CIA interrogations. There was no public report issued in that case. So Mueller has a lot of flexibility about what he might want to do here. Now, of course, in any case, he probably would be subpoenaed by the House Democrats, or at least invited to testify and tell them what he has found. So that could that life could continue for him in his investigation after even he says we have ended our formal work. I mean, I think that the bottom line for me has always been, all right, let's see the evidence. Let's wait. Let's look. Let's examine what he finds. And then we can make up our judgments about the facts and what it means for the Trump presidency and the election of 2016 after that. That's still my default option. And so, but I do think he should wrap it up soon for the good of the country, get this behind us and get people moving on to the away from litigating whether or not the 2016 election was legitimate. But before we go, Kim, I just want to talk about one more element with Andrew McCabe, and that is he was identified by the inspector general as having lied to the FBI about the Hillary Clinton email probe in a couple of instances. And that was referred to by the IG to prosecutors to examine. What do we know about where that stands?
Well, it was referred in a couple of ways. It was referred internally to the FBI, to their office that handles their kind of professional conduct office, and that also handles HR things, etc. And on the basis of that, there was a recommendation he be terminated, and he was. And of course, it caused a big brouhaha because he was fired right before he would have been eligible for his government pension, etc. And he continues to fight that. Separately, there are reports, but they have never been publicly confirmed, or at least not by anyone on the record, that he is the subject of a grand jury investigation into this question of lying and potentially leaking. Remember, he was also fired for leaking information to the press. Nothing that was classified, you know, not but that we know of, but that was another reason that he was let go. So these are yet unconfirmed reports, Paul, and I don't have any further information than that on them.
Yeah, and the IG scored him for lying about those leaks. Right? I mean, that was
was part of the lying question.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, all right. We shall follow this more. Thank you. We hope this helped a little bit to dissect or at least to put all of these many accusations and counter accusations into some context. Thanks, Kim. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.